First published in 1993, The Virgin Suicides was the debut novel of American writer Jeffrey Eugenides. Its opening lines told us from the word go that this book was going to be devastating, emotional, and perhaps like nothing we had read before. It has gone on to become a modern cult classic, having a resurgence most recently on TikTok with a whole new generation of young people, primarily young women. That the novel resonates so intensely with women is fascinating, as the protagonists in the book are in fact young men, or rather middle-aged men, reminiscing about their youth and trying to make sense of this seminal event which took place in their neighbourhood in mid-1970s Michigan. The novel is centred around the five Lisbon sisters, girls who live in a seemingly restrictive family life in a well-to-do suburb in America. We understand very little about the Lisbon sisters, as the point of view of the novel is actually that of the boys in the neighbourhood who lived amongst the Lisbon sisters but never truly knew them, never truly understood them. Eugenides has said that this is really at the crux of the book, that those boys desperately try to analyse and understand the girls, but they never really do ever come to an understanding of who these girls are. But in the novel, what we are reading is them going on an exploration of what happened to these girls, why it happened. They are interviewing characters from their youth, you know, trying to understand who, what, where, when of this event, of this tragic suicide of five girls that they grew up around, girls they were fascinated by, mesmerized by, in some ways obsessed with, but never truly knew. The novel is in so many ways about the male gaze and is actually not about the Lisbon sisters. We don't hear from them directly. We're never in their heads as the reader. This is really a novel about the male experience of trying to understand women, of trying to understand suicide, and of trying to make sense of the insensible when it happens to us, or when we experience it as young people. I think that the most spectacular part of the book, really the most captivating moment, comes at the very beginning when you are told exactly what the tone is for this incredible book. And so the novel begins. On the morning the last Lisbon daughter took her turn at suicide, it was Mary this time, and sleeping pills like Therese. The two paramedics arrived at the house knowing exactly where the knife drawer was, and the gas oven, and the beam in the basement from which it was possible to tie a rope. They got out of the EMS truck, as usual, moving much too slowly in our opinion, and the fat one said under his breath, "This ain't TV, folks, this is how fast we go." He was carrying the heavy respirator and cardiac unit past the bushes that had grown monstrous and over the erupting lawn, tame and immaculate, 13 months earlier, when the trouble began. The book begins with the attempt, with an event with Cecilia, the youngest Lisbon sister, who I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say is the first of the girls to attempt to take her life. And what follows on from Celia's suicide attempt is a deterioration of the life of the Lisbon girls and their home. We are already witness to the fact that they seem to not have much of a social life outside of their home. They are allowed to go to church on Sunday in their Sunday best, but aren't really given the freedom to do much else. What's fascinating about the novel is this issue of their home life, of what's really going on for the Lisbon sisters, why they come to the end they come to, is never really ultimately made clear, because we are always watching them from the outside. We are watching their lawn deteriorate, as we see in the first paragraph. We are watching as their house becomes a shambles from the outside. We watch as their little freedom they have seems to get pulled away from them more and more. We watch their rebellion through the eyes of the boys who spy on the girls doing subversive things in the dead of night. But we never speak to the girls themselves, we never hear from the girls themselves. And perhaps it's this sort of mysterious nature to the narrative of the book which has given it its beloved cult status over the last 30 years. Recently, I was lucky enough to see Eugenides giving a talk at the Berlin Literature Festival, and there he talked about how this is actually his favourite novel, that he wrote this book in his early 30s when he was absolutely desperate to finally cement himself as a real novelist, to have really published a book and stop mumbling, "I'm a novelist," at wine parties while not really having anything to show for it. And you can feel, I think, in the reading of this book, in the text, that it is written with this complete abandon, with a kind of the kind of self-assuredness that comes from having never been publicly critiqued. He has also said, Eugenides, about the book, that he personally doesn't subscribe to the idea that you should only write about what you know personally and to sort of stay in your lane. But that he, nevertheless, when he receives criticism, which he sometimes does, from people saying that as a man he has no right to write a book about women and to write a book from the perspective of women, he quite rightly points out that that is not what he did here. He didn't write the perspective of the young girls at all. And what he said at the talk was actually that the whole point of the book is that these schoolboys, who we are now speaking to as middle-aged men, never knew these girls and have lived in a state of arrested development actually all their lives, obsessed with this moment and never truly growing up and never truly moving on from it. But that the whole point of the book is that the point of view is the men, boys, and not the girls at all. And I think that that also creates this really fascinating aspect of the story, because you as the reader, I would argue, never really fully come to an understanding of who these girls are, what really was going on. They speak to so many characters, most memorably for me, Trip Fontaine, the school heartthrob. And we also get to see through these sort of interviews that are being taken 20 years later, we get to understand also how other people's lives turned out in that town. And it really rang true of the realities, I think, of school reunions and of looking back and of seeing people from the past as they are and as they became. I think another thing undoubtedly which solidified the cult status of this book, a book which on its release actually Eugenides says was not a commercial success at all and didn't really make much of a splash, was Sofia Coppola's 1999 film, her film adaptation of the book, also named The Virgin Suicides, and also a debut. This was Coppola's debut novel. She says that she had actually resisted going into film because of her family's history. She's the daughter of Francis Ford Coppola, of course. Her cousin is Jason Schwartzman, and so on. And so Nicolas Cage, I think, is also a Coppola. So she'd actually resisted going into the family business, so to speak. But and here's a major name drop from her: Thurston Moore recommended the novel to her, when she was in her late 20s and feeling somewhat lost. She took his advice, bought the book, devoured the book, was madly in love with the book. And when she found out it was being adapted into a screenplay, she felt so passionate about the novel, so sort of personally, that the novel was almost, you know, hers and resonated with her so much that she went ahead and wrote her own screenplay in the hope that if the planned one wasn't picked up, that she would have a chance. And that's exactly what happened. And I think so many people's actual first encounter with The Virgin Suicides is through the Coppola novel movie. And it's an amazing movie, and I think that the movie is so true to the book. I'm definitely somebody who believes that novels are almost always better than the cinematic adaptation. But actually, in the case of The Virgin Suicides, I think the Coppola was so loyal to Jeffrey Eugenides' work that the novel is so well represented in the film, and I would argue that they are comparably good and portray the same emotions and energy as one another. So that's definitely something I would recommend having a look at. Always read the novel first, I would say, but I would say that the film is absolutely worthy of exploration if you love the film and explore the film. And it's very it's sort of quite zeitgeisty for the era, for the late 90s. It has this incredible soundtrack by the French band Air, and it all just fits together as this very dreamy, ethereal piece of cinema, which is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly well suited to the novel itself, and I absolutely can't fault it. This is a novel about teen heartbreak, a novel about midlife decay, about disappointments, about never truly knowing the people that we are desperate to get close to. And I think in so many ways that is what has made this book an enduring piece of literature. It is at times very dark, but it is also a novel with many, many moments of lightness. Eugenides is actually a hilarious writer. He's also in person an incredibly hilarious person too. He's full of joviality, which is not what one would expect from a man who made his name writing a book about the suicide of five teenage girls. You can see the lightheartedness, the light and the dark of his writing immediately in the novel's opening chapter. It's evident after Cecilia is taken to hospital, and can be displayed by this piece here from chapter 1, page 7. The paramedics took Cecilia to Bon Secours Hospital and Courcheval and Maumee. In the emergency room, Cecilia watched the attempt to save her life with an eerie detachment. Her yellow eyes didn't blink, nor did she flinch when they stuck a needle in her arm. Dr. Amundsen stitched up her wrist wounds. Within 5 minutes of the transfusion, he declared her out of danger. Chucking her under the chin, he said, "What are you doing here, honey? You're not even old enough to know how bad life gets." And it was then Cecilia gave orally what was to be her only form of suicide note, and a useless one at that, because she was going to live. "Obviously, doctor," she said, "you've never been a 13-year-old girl." I think for me that's one of my favourite lines in the book, because it really, really displays the juxtaposition of this novel, the way in which it's an incredibly dark subject but told at times with absolutely delightful hilarity by Eugenides. So in conclusion, I would absolutely recommend The Virgin Suicides. In my opinion, it deserves its cult status. I can understand why it has recently had a popular resurgence on TikTok and in general with a younger audience. It's beautiful. It's timeless, unfortunately, the topic of teen malaise. And it is a modern classic, which I think will actually one day enter the canon and become part of the American literary canon. After The Virgin Suicides, Eugenides went on to publish two more novels. His second novel, Middlesex, won the Pulitzer Prize. This is also an incredible novel, which I recommend wholeheartedly and hope to do a review of at some point in the future. Right now, as I record this, it is the 30th anniversary of Virgin Suicides, and the publishers have released a beautiful hardback edition. I also recommend, if you can get your hands on it, getting the Picador Modern Classics edition in hardback, which I'm fortunate enough to have. That's the edition you can see on the cover of this podcast. It's beautiful, the roses are incredible, and I really enjoyed reading the book in this format. So overall, that is everything I have to say about The Virgin Suicides. I really, really hope you check it out if you haven't already. If you have already read the book, what did you think? You know, maybe let me know in social media comments or something like this. And I thank you very much for taking the time to listen to this, and I look forward very much to the next book review. Thank you.